This is our first yard of the year that we're checking. So you got a hive tool for me, dude? Oh, okay. Alright. Oh, it don't really matter. Alright, yeah, OJ, you can work across. So the first thing we usually do is just end up like cracking the hive. Come in just to crack it, see what we're working with. And this one right here is really weak. So we're gonna have to inspect it and see what's up with it. That one looks weak too. So we just go through the hive. Usually the middle frames are what you could tell if they have anything. And this one right here. This one. The main thing we look for is eggs. Because, you know, it's always hard to find the queen. So with the sun out and everything, usually you can see eggs. And right now, this hive, I believe, is going to be queenless. Yeah, very, very weak hive. Very ugly. So to fix a hive, as long as it has bees in it, we take two or three frames of brood, add it in there, and then we'll pop a queen in right on the lid. So, you know, you can tell if they're queen, right? Like how calm they are and everything. So what you can do is I pop, open up the queen box, look for, make sure she's alive in there. You can see that she is moving around.
Bees are a way I stay connected with my grandfather after he's passed. Like I feel him around me when I'm beekeeping. And it's a very, very powerful and a very private thing, but I can like hear him talking to me. I ask questions while I'm beekeeping. What should I do about this? And I think on it and an answer comes. It's a very spiritual thing for me and a very personal one.
The project is the Tanzanian Bee Sanctuary. It's located in Dodoma, Tanzania. I was approached by Mary Canning, who runs Follow the Honey. She's the client, and she has partners in Tanzania that actually do teach sustainable beekeeping.
I'm a beekeeper who happens to be blind, and my journey with bees actually started when I was 10, and I was sighted, and a swarm came into our backyard, and my grandfather knew a beekeeper in town, and he came and captured the swarm, and it just fascinated me, and it really stayed with me. And when I was a junior in high school, I ordered my first hive and a package of bees from Sears and Roebuck catalog.
I would say the project that I'm known for is the Pruitt-Igoe Bee Sanctuary. And Pruitt-Igoe was a legendary housing project here in St. Louis. It was built in the 50s, and it was kind of just taken apart in the 70s, and it is one of the worst examples of public housing. And it was designed by the architect Yamasaki, who designed the Twin Towers.
Thank you.
Yeah, give me another frame because it looks like all old brew.
I don't wear gloves.
Oh, right here, I got a queen too. Can you see her?
And yeah, so I really don't limit myself to, yes, I have been stung on my hands, not an inordinate amount of times, you know, maybe a few times a year.
It's like, you know, their last resort. They don't want to sting. They don't like stinging because they know they'll die. This is just their last resort. They get that, you know, they just had enough and it's over. You know, they're going to sting you. And they actually release a pheromone, too, if you get stung. They have the hive nose for the attack, too.
I went with my grandpa to go catch a swarm, and he had me stand back by the truck while he sawed the limb off this tree to get to the bees. And a neighbor started up a lawnmower and upset the bees, and they flew back into the air, and I felt something in my hair on my scalp, and then I was getting stung, and then there were like five or six in there, and Grandpa came to the rescue and pulled them out. And, you know, he's had me sit in the truck for the rest of the time. And he said, you know, if your throat closes up, just honk the horn.
So, and it's always been from something stupid I've done, you know, having my fingers separated and the bees are in between. And then, you know, I squish my fingers back together, catch somebody in between. You know, are moving too quickly and a bee's not out of the way.
And so my first gesture is that I built a site-specific sculpture of beehives on the site, and it replicated a Pruitt-Igoe building.
Traditional forms of beekeeping there would look like something like where, you know, logs filled with lemongrass attract wild bee swarms. They, you know, the beekeeper would break it open, collect the, you know, the honeycombs, but in the process probably, you know, kill the queen, destroy the hive, and then do the same thing again, waiting for another wild bee swarm. So the enterprise in Tanzania there was actually teaching sustainable beekeeping and actually domesticating bees.
And when I was making the sculpture, they were defunct hives that had pheromones still in them. So they're attracting a lot of bees. And that was the kind of uh-oh moment of like, you don't know anything about bees. This is not safe. This is next to junior high. You know, like, maybe you should start learning more about bees. So that's when my journey of becoming a beekeeper started.
But I survived, and he was really proud of me, and he said, you know, you can be a beekeeper if you want. You know, he's really proud because I didn't even scream. I just fell to my knees and was kind of flailing when he saw me.
I put the lid down, which you kind of use as a coaster while you put other supers on it, because it kind of prevents the grass from getting in it. But my, you know, I'm a newbie, and I took the lid off, and there were some bees on it, and I stepped backwards, stepped on the lid, crushed a couple, and I got, you know, they rang the alarm, and I got totally stung.
For the most part, I feel that because I can feel what I'm doing, I can feel when the bees are there. I can move slow enough that I can just kind of move them out of the way and lift a frame out.
But he also did something later on. I swatted at a bee that came near me, and he got really upset, and he took me outside, and he made me sit there and put a bee on my forearm and had it crawl on me to prove to me that the bee has no interest in me whatsoever. So those two things got me over my fear of bees.
we pass this huge urban forest. And I casually just said, what's up with the forest? Like, it just, I've never seen it. I was shocked that it was there. The historian said, well, that's the old Pruitt-Igoe site. It became a forest. And that's what really, like, got me intrigued. I needed to know more. And like a lot of my projects, I just created artwork as a way of just learning more.
I'm fascinated with sound, so I started looking for ways to be able to listen to what's going on in the hive when, you know, I'm not working with the bees, and came up with kind of a simple solution of a lavalier microphone that connected to my iPhone and making recordings from the observation board.
And quickly when you went in there, all the trees kind of muffled the sound of the city. The word sanctuary just automatically just came up to you.
I feel like I'm providing sanctuary for these tiny creatures that are the linchpin of our food system. And when I'm with the bees, I drop out of society and I'm just in their world. And it's fascinating to me that these bees pollinate 80 to 90% of what we eat worldwide. And they're so benevolent and small.
It's not really we weren't really designing a place for bees. We were designing a place for people that work with bees. In fact, the bees had to be held away from the project, because with the extraction center, if the bees were too close, they would come and steal the honey back.
You know, like say if this hive's weak, they'll come in, they'll rob her out. Like they'll just gang up on that hive and just decimate it. The robbing's a big issue with the beekeeping too. That's why we don't have so many in one area.
So the project itself was actually just creating a center with a market that had spaces for the beekeepers to be taught how to do beekeeping, these sustainable practices, how to run a business, bringing also a extraction center where they could bring their honeycombs and honey, and then also area to do a workshop to work with the beeswax to make products. So, and then a marketplace to sell them locally as well as then ship them out internationally.
When I'm around the bees, I get completely lost in time.
A fun thing is whenever you bump into an insect in the garden, we'll say, look it up, see how long it lives. And you're like, oh, 12 days. I mean, bees live an average of like 30 days.
I was just thinking in terms of time, and they do things on their time, on their schedule.
Like they just have that, those 30 days, and that's it, you know? And so yeah, time is really interesting to kind of dive into when you're analyzing the garden and stuff.
You have to take time in your life to, you know, sort of be in the now. And the bees always remind me of that.
What's also kind of funny about beekeeping is that yes, you're the beekeeper, and yes, you're getting in there and manipulating things, trying to make a healthy situation for the hive, or trying to make them do what you want them to do. And sometimes bees make me laugh, because then I'll come back and open the hive and they've completely done something I didn't expect.
I thought of it in almost a formal, elemental way. As we were sort of designing the building, one of the things I said to myself was, we're going to learn from the bee, but we're not going to do a honeycomb pattern building. You know, it doesn't have to look like the bee to be about the bees.
You know, you are keeping them, but they're also teaching you who's in control, and it's not you, it's them. And I like that about beekeeping too. It kind of puts humans back in their place.